Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, continuing now with the story of Erwin Stoveroff. He's about to turn 94, but he has not slowed down a bit since I first interviewed him in 2009. In fact, he's only ramped up his efforts to provide today's returning veterans with service dogs. More on that in a bit, but now, back to Stalag Luft 1 in Barth, Germany. He survived being shot down in August of 1944, but I imagine the further you got into 1945, the more difficult the conditions became.
We were one of the lucky camps that was getting Red Cross parcels, because if we relied on the Germans, the bread had nothing but sticks in it, and the soup was terrible, and kohlrabis and lousy, lousy potatoes is what they gave us.
So you weren't a fan of tree flour?
Not really. Not really at all, but the Red Cross, I would like to say regularly, and the truth is they regularly did get the boxes to us, but the Germans kept them from us because they just did. We found out after the war was over in the warehouse there were stacks of Red Cross boxes that they had kept from us, and I don't know how many they kept for themselves because, you know, we had Spam in there, we had cigarettes in there, we had Klim, which is... milk spelt backwards, powdered milk.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. And as a matter of fact, I remember an awful lot when you think about it. But, you know, there was enough there to sustain us. But without that, we all started to lose weight. And we did lose weight. And we did have sicknesses. They only did what they had to do it. Would I say they were an enemy that had full respect? Not particularly.
By early 1945... word started making its way around the camp that the Jewish prisoners would be separated out. And I can't imagine, Erwin, that the first time you heard that, it was anything close to good news.
I really and truly couldn't believe it. My co-pilot's brother was an adjutant to Colonel Gabreski in one of the other compounds. And, of course, they got the news first. And he got a hold of his younger brother, who was my co-pilot, and told him, you know, get Erwin prepared. Get Erwin prepared. We're very concerned. We were standing at a roll call. Then they said, we want all the Jewish prisoners to remain, and nobody moved. Nobody moved. And then when they started it, our commanding officer, Colonel Zemke.
Hub Zemke, the great P-47 ace.
The great guy. And he was a great, great man. And he really and truly laid it out to the German commandant that... you would better understand, you're going to lose this war. And you do anything to my men, anything at all to my men, and you will become a war criminal, and I personally will come here and be sure that you are shot. I mean, he did it. He just told him. And we had another guy by the name of Colonel Spicer, who really made a tremendous speech, and he was sentenced to death for his speech. But, I mean, I have witnessed and I have lived and I've been in a camp with two of the bravest men I've ever known in my life. But they did it. They did. They segregated us. We were put in a barracks near the front gate. Every Jewish prisoner that they could find, they put in the same area. And I will tell you, from that moment on, I really and truly was concerned about whether I was going to get home. Up until then, I always felt, I really and truly believed that the Germans, we knew they were going to lose the war. We knew that when we started, but I had that feeling that I was going to get home. I was absolutely going to get home until I got segregated, and then I had questions, and then it was a mental battle then as to what was going to happen.
Now, did you hear at that point that Hitler had ordered all Jewish prisoners to be killed? Is that something?
That's what we were told.
Yep. I can imagine why it changed your perspective on things and made you worry.
And I must honestly tell you, it wasn't a comfortable environment because, you know, as Colonel Zemke said, these men are American officers. We know them as American officers, and they are recognized as American officers, and you are making a segregation of these men? We do not believe in that. That is not the way we do things. Well, I was part of an organization. My plane, there was 10 guys in my plane, two of us were Jewish, and 8 of us weren't, but you know, we were all together, and anybody that knows and anybody that lived through flying in one of those planes, you were a team. You know, there was in combat, you weren't lieutenant, you weren't sergeant, you were whatever your nickname is. My nickname was Russian because of my last name being Stovroff. And after we got shot down, I told everybody, for God's sake, don't call me by my nickname. I said, you know, they hate the Russians more than they hate us. And the beautiful part of the whole ending was I got liberated by the Russians.
Mm-hmm. And I was that was going to be my next question. And obviously there was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of suffering, a lot of agony between that segregation and the couple months that were still to go before you were liberated.
Oh, yeah.
But what did that feel like when you realized they don't have time to kill us? Their time is up, we're free, and for us, the war is over.
Oh, it's something you really and truly, you know, you cannot live in the past, but you cannot forget it. Well, that's what we try to tell everybody, including governments, everybody, but you can't forget the past. And you can't forget the traumatic experience that all of us had, being captured and being put in and losing all your rights and relying on the enemy to feed you or take care of you, whatever it is. We all have post-traumatic stress disorder. Like today with these young men coming back, they are in the numbers of maybe 200,000 to 300,000 of them are going to have PTSD from going to 2 and 3 and 4 parts of combat. But, you know, being captured, being held, being the uncertainty and everything, you can't lose it. You can't let it get you, but you can't lose it. And I'm just very fortunate that I accepted what my problems are, and I have shared them as I do my claim work with the other POWs that I've worked with. My friend Ray Nasley and I work together in Palm Beach, and we have done over 400 claims of ex-POWs, so I've heard a lot of stories. Again, it makes me feel how lucky I am when I hear some of the other stories.
Well, I'm sure all those people that you've helped feel very blessed for your efforts on their behalf, as do the men and women coming back today and that are helped by Vets Helping Heroes. And again, vetshelpingheroes.org to read more about this. You can also link through that website to all kinds of information about Irwin's background and his history. There are a couple more questions that I want to ask you before we get back into some specifics of the vet dogs. Now, I've seen a picture of you shaking hands with another former POW of a different vintage, Senator John McCain, who had the privilege of giving you a Distinguished Flying Cross a few years late, 55 years late to be exact. Tell us how that developed and what that meant to you.
Well, actually what happened is, you know, you sort of drift apart from your crew after years and years, and then all of a sudden you get to the point where, hey, where are these guys that shared an experience in life that few people have? So I found out that we were having reunions, 44th Bomb Group, and I decided to start going to the reunions. And at the very first reunion, at one of the discussions we had, somebody said, what'd you do with your medals? And I said, I gave them to my grandson. And he said, well, why would you give your DFC to your grandson? And I said, why? I never got it. And fortunately, Colonel Gibson, our commanding officer at that point, was alive and there. And we talked to him, and he said absolutely he knew that our entire crew was given the DFC. And so one thing led to another, and I was advised that I was going to get the medal. And did I want to go to a camp, or John McCain was coming down at a certain date and would be happy to give it to me. So that's how I got the medal from John McCain.
Well deserved, and I'm glad they took care of it eventually for you. It doesn't sound like you were complaining at all, but I'm sure it was still a special moment. Now, more recently, even, you've been given the French Legion of Honor. How did that come about?
Well, that came about because I was working in the VA hospital, and somebody came to me and said, the French government is looking for guys that were involved both on the ground and in the air that had anything to do with helping the freedom of France. And they said, didn't you bomb in France? And I said, yeah, I did. Out of my 35 missions, I think I had 7 or 8 of them were in France, somewhere in that area. And they said, well, they'd like to send you a form, and they'll analyze your form. And I said, well, that will be wonderful. So they sent me the form. And 2 years later, I was advised that the French consulate had said, we will be holding a ceremony, and it was a great honor to give you the highest medal that we have, which is the French Legion of Honor. And I have this beautiful medal at home, and it it really is really special. And they also told me that, please come to France and wear your medal because people will love you. Well, I don't know if I'm going to get to France, and I have yet to wear the medal, but I'm really proud of it. But not as proud of my American as my American medals.
I know that you're not here to talk about all your medals or about what you did, that you're here to spread the word about your organization. But I just want to thank you for serving our country in World War II, for all the service you've provided to veterans since then. And I'm curious if you ever stop and think how things would be different if, A, they'd hit you when they were shooting at you as you parachuted out of that flaming B-17, or if your old neighbor from Buffalo hadn't been the guy to interrogate you in Frankfurt.
Yeah, there are so many things. I know I'm what a fortunate man I am, and I must tell you that doing what I'm doing now is so important, because being part of the American Vet Dog Veterans Canine Corps and being a fundraising arm for them, which we call Vets Helping Heroes, hard to describe how important this thing is, because I know how lucky I am, and I know when I see these young fellas how unfortunate it is for them that for the rest of their life they're going to be disabled one way or another, whether they're blind or whatever it is. And fortunately, we're part of a program that can deliver guide dogs, service dogs, combat stress relief dogs, military therapy dogs. We can cover everything that they need. And that's why I'm so pleased that I am part of it. The American Vet Dog Program is outstanding, and I'm privileged that I can raise the funds that they need so we can take care of these young men coming home.
You wouldn't still be doing this if you didn't really believe that it's making a big difference. I know you just mentioned some of the different areas that those dogs can be employed with the servicemen. Is there anything that people listening today, other than sending you a check in the mail, and they can do that online at the website, but anything other than that, that they can do to help this effort?
Well, if there are somebody out there listening to me and thinking, yes, there is something I would do, I'd like to do what you're doing, let me know. Or contact the American Vet Dog Program in Smithtown, New York. I'm sure that they would like to have more help, but contact me if you want to know who they are and who to talk to, and because we're the one organization that does put therapy dogs in Walter Reed for the veterans there to get acclimated to them, and what a therapy dog can do in calming him down in many cases.
I know that you've been bombarded with people wanting to hear from you or wanting to send you checks. I know that never gets old for you. But if there's one thing that's been shared with you by one of the veterans helped by one of these dogs that you like to share, is there one comment that just makes you feel, you know what, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing?
Yeah, I was in Washington, and we were having a graduation ceremony, and one of the veterans there has seizures. And while he was there, his dog started to bark. And these dogs do not bark. And it was telling him, sit down, you're going to have a seizure.
Wow.
And we saw it. And we saw how long it took. And then we saw the dog come over and lick his face and wake him up. And, you know, these are so unbelievable things to see what the dog can do. And this is just one example of it. And his name is Mike. And we talked to one another afterwards, and he gave me a big hug, and he said, you know what my dog means to me now. You've seen it. Now, what more can I tell you?
That's a life-saving dog.
Yeah.
That's why you're doing what you're doing. Well, that is perfect, Erwin. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I know your time is very valuable, and I hope that a lot of our listeners are going to be contacting you and supporting this program. And don't stop. I might call you down the road for an update.
Oh, and thank you. Thank you for calling on me.
And I did have that chance to catch up with Erwin this week. Vets Helping Heroes has now raised more than $7 million toward this effort, providing more than 225 dogs already, with a commitment to reach 300. And he would love to have your help, too. VetsHelpingHeroes.org is the website. I have it linked for you at HometownHeroesRadio.com. And as I mentioned, there's now a book about his story, An Extraordinary Life Gone to the Dogs. Great title. I have that linked for you as well. And this is what I mean when I say we can be inspired by these members of our greatest generation, not only what they did then, But in Irwin's case, what continues to energize him now? I don't know about you, but it sure fires me up. We're out of time for now, but thanks for spending this hour with us on Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.